This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. And in On Country this morning, we're going to a very important part of Queensland and an important nation that played a huge role in the land rights struggle in Australia. We're talking about the Arakoon Wik Nation and the Wik people who were successful in a battle for land rights that went all the way to the High Court of Australia in the early 1990s. Kerry Tamwoy is a Wik woman who is the mayor of the Arakoon Shire Council, and she is our guest On Country this morning. Kerry, a very good morning and welcome to On Country.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for telling us about the Arakoon Nation. Is it best to describe it as a nation, the Arakoon land, the Arakoon people? How would you describe it?
The Arakoon Wik Nation.
And where is that? Give us an idea, geographically, where in Australia is it?
Arakoon is located on the far western coast of Cape York in Queensland, and we are situated at the mouth of three rivers, the Archer, Watson, and the Ward. The boundaries that surround Arakoon are the Holroyd River and Pomperow Deed of Grant in Trustlands to the south, Cookshire and Archer Bend National Park to the east, and the Gulf of Carpentaria and Cookshire to the north.
It is a famous name in Australia, the Wik name, because of a High Court decision. Just briefly explain what happened there, if you can, and why that is so important.
It's very important for us. The Wik claim was very, very important for us because my people, the Wik people, decided that they wanted to be recognized as traditional owners and custodians of the land, Arakoon and surrounding. It was a very long and hard battle for my people. My mother herself was one of the claimants. The battle started in 1993, and we finally had a decision delivered in January of 1996. And, it meant that, you know, our leaders and elders had to, you know, travel out of Arakoon and go down to Brisbane, go down to Canberra, you know, to get their case heard and, you know, that fight to be recognized. And it's very important because today we have, you know, the right to, you know, negotiate. If mining companies want to mine on our land, we can negotiate with mining companies and whatnot.
And what else can you do besides that? I mean, can you control what happens on your land?
We do have our native title representative body. They're called Ngunakunch, and that means our we belong to this place. And they represent native title holders. And they do control some elements of what can and cannot be done on country, but unfortunately there's so much, you know, like red tape around it that we can't, like myself as a traditional owner, cannot necessarily go and start up a business, say like a tourism business on my great grandmother's country, if you know what I mean.
So why is that the case? What kind of land rights were given to you as a result of that that High Court decision?
It was a hit and a miss. Because then, you know, the government came out with their 10-point plan, and which meant that we couldn't pretty much do anything on country.
I suppose the Wik decision did help establish the fact that your rights coexisted with the rights of those who might have had pastoral leases.
Yes, yes.
And that hopefully will be precedent for the rest of the nation at some point. And has that been the case?
Yeah, I think it has been. We're actually using our native title rights at the moment to do like proper good negotiations with Glencore. You know, it's opened up some doors for us in good ways.
Okay. Just explain to us about the Arakoon Wik people. Is it different parts of the land there, that area that you cover? Just explain how many different nations there might be on that land.
The Wik people, we are five ceremonial clan groups. And of course, we are the traditional owners of a vast and diverse ecosystem which covers the central part of the Western Cape York. The five different clan groups are Sara, Apalach, Winchunam, Puch, and Wanam.
And were they separated by just where they lived or the families that were involved? How did that work?
In the past, everyone lived on homelands, right, out on country, and everyone lived within their clans, on their country. And I guess there was some cases where they coexisted, you know, with intermarriage and all that.
And did that mean that in that area there was a lot of movement around? Did people go and visit others' country? And then what would happen if that happened? And was that mostly in order to meet and to marry, or was it for hunting purposes? I mean, we're going back, obviously, prior to white settlement here, you know, maybe 10,000 years, 5,000 years, 1,000 years before that happened. What was the process that people moved around in that area? Or did they pretty much just stay where they lived?
Well, from what I know, the process was, and we still use it from time to time today, okay, if somebody is crossing a boundary area that's not theirs, they are to call out and let the people of that country know we're just passing through, asking for permission to pass through as a sign of respect. Coexisting meant respecting each other's boundaries and not crossing over it unless permission was given and granted.
And does that still exist today? Does that still happen today? If you were going to somebody else's land, somebody else's country, would you still be required to do that? And would there be a welcome to country ceremony? How would that work?
Yes. I would still be required to ask the traditional owner or the elder of a certain place if I wanted to go fishing or camping. As respect, I would go and ask, is it all right if I took my family out onto your country? You know, normally permission is granted, but there is no need for me to be welcomed onto country because growing up in Arakoon, I've already been welcomed onto country by the old people when I was younger. So
where does Arakoon fit into this? What is Arakoon? When you talk about that, you talk about the Arakoon Wik Nation. What is Arakoon then? What do you mean by that?
Arakoon is where we live, the community.
Arakoon is the place and Wik is the people, is that right?
Yes. Arakoon is the place and Wik is the people. Wik. Before colonization, everyone lived out on country, on their homelands, the southern and the northern Wik homelands. With colonization, they slowly brought us into the mission. The young ones were put in the institution, you know, the dormitories, and our old people had to learn a new structure, a new way of living. And I guess Wik describes the people because before colonization, we spoke many different languages. We spoke our own tongue. My grandfather's native tongue is Wik Ngathan, and that's what he spoke before being introduced to English, before Wik Munkan became the universal language for the Wik people. Wik Munkan to us is like English. It was easier for all the different tongues to learn it, which is why today Wik Munkan is our main language, because all the clans can speak it.
And does everyone still speak that, or do they speak English generally, or will they generally be speaking that original Wik language?
No, Wik Munkan is still spoken. It's the first language that children learn, you know, when they start to talk. And gradually they learn English because, you know, they have to go to school and,
Yeah. So you would describe yourself as a Wik woman?
Yes, I do. I describe myself as a Wik woman, but my clan is Puch, my grandfather's clan.
Because it comes down through the male line.
Yes.
Kerry Tamwoy is our guest, Mayor of the Arakoon Shire Council on the Arakoon Wik Nation. Your mother was also mayor. How did that come about? And how did you become mayor as well?
Okay. My mum, I guess she was just born to lead, right? She was just a leader. She was encouraged by her elders who mentored her to run for mayorship, and she was successful, and she became the first female mayor for Arakoon. She was a very strong woman. She was a land rights activist, and she advocated the issues of alcohol abuse. She advocated for children. She advocated for the elders, for domestic violence. So she did a lot of fantastic things. Now, myself, on the other hand, I never dreamt that I'd be where I am now, because, you know, it just didn't interest me. But because my people, the WIC people, saw something in me, and it was the WIC people that said to me, run at the next elections. You need to run for mayor. So I'm just doing what my people wanted. And I guess people just wanted a change. And so here I am. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Let's go back more than 250 years to a time before white settlement, colonization. Mm-hmm. What was daily life like for WIC people in your area a couple of hundred years ago?
Well, I guess it would be similar to what my mum has tried to teach us growing up. You know, just being out on country, hunting and gathering, living together in harmony. The men knew what their role and responsibilities were. The women were the same, and the children, you know, they knew to respect. They had utmost respect for their elders, because the elders were the final authority, because they kept law, L-O-R-E, strong. Whatever the elder said, you know, they abided by it. They were people that were initiated through ceremony, and that's very sacred. And they were strong people, and that's how they lived and, you know, survived.
Mm. Were they an artistic people? Because I know there's a lot of holdings, say, in the National Gallery of art from the Arakoon WIC Nation, isn't there?
Well, when I go back to looking at really old footages of our old people, you know, dancing in ceremony, and you see how they're all dressed up, and it's different to how we dress up today, you know, in our ceremonial body paint and headdresses and all that. Back then it was different. So yes, they were artistic, because you could see it on their costume, on their body paint and their headdresses and their spears and, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell me then also about life in those times. Did you have a different concept of seasons, for example, or food and education, things like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we actually have seven seasons for Arakoon. They're broken down month by month. And in January, we have Umkapak, which is the wet weather. February to March, we have Karp, wet season. April is Onchen Wayat, end of wet. May to July is Onchen Min, cold, dry weather. August to September is Kayaman Mal, and that's the beginning of hot, dry weather. October to November, Kayaman Pung Ngan Ling Ling, hot, dry weather. December, Tapat, hot with first rains. And that's broken down into our seasonal calendar, which displays the knowledge of our surrounding regions and the availability of our natural food resources and whatnot, and also our cultural obligations that are required to maintain our country. Like, for example, when is the right time to burn, when is not the right time to burn.
Did it mean, because of the climate there as well, that you generally stayed in the one place, you weren't a nomadic people?
Well, listening to my mum when she used to tell us stories about when growing up out on country with her two grandmothers, yes, they moved around. And they were nomadic, because at a certain season they'd move to one spot because they knew that the food resources were plenty in that area for that time. So, yeah, they moved around a lot, yeah.
What about these days? Who are some of the well-known names who may have come from the WIC Nation? Maybe musicians, artists, activists like your mother?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we have, from the past, Donald Pankina, Bruce Yankapora, John Kawada, these are all deceased. Mr. and Mrs. Kalkiyota, our most prominent elders and cultural custodians, Arthur Pembegan, Gladys Taibengumpa, another activist, my grandma who's passed away, Mavis Nalameta, my cousin Stan Kalkiyota, who was Gladys's brother, the Nampanan brothers, you know, with their carvings, and before them, their father, Angus Nampanan, Janine Shevathan, Phyllis Yankapora, you know, all these people, and so many more that my list could go on.
Sure.
So many more that have played a very important role for the Wik people and in the history of Wik people.
Why do you think the Wik people are so active and so and have so have had such an important influence on Australian Indigenous life?
I guess we've always been very strong people, and we've always been people that know what we've wanted. You know, when with colonization came separation, and we were separated from the things that meant so much to us, the things that kept us together. That's why we're strong, because we want people to know that, hey, we want to be recognized what's rightfully ours.
And that's what drove that court case.
Yes.
That must have been a remarkable time, because so many people in so many places around Australia had been advocating and agitating for that. Why was it that it was your mother and other members of the Arakoon Wik Nation that went on with it?
I guess they believed that it was something that was worth fighting for, and I guess they never lost sight that they could lose.
Mm.
They knew in their hearts that they could win this if they took it all the way, you know.
Which they did. And that means that these days you are there, and Kerry Tamwoy is our guest, the Mayor of the Arakoon Shire Council. What does that mean? What is your role as Mayor? What role does the Council play in Arakoon or Wik life in Arakoon Wik Nation?
I see my role as doing what's best for my community of Arakoon and for my people. And I guess being a voice for my people, I believe I have a bigger platform now, and I'm able to be a voice, a much more stronger voice for the Wik Nation, I guess. And it's all about service, serving my people. And like I said, doing what's best for the community and trying to take it forward.
So if people wanted to visit Arakoon Wik Nation, the Arakoon country and the Wik people, where should they go? What are the major landmarks and those that are sacred to you, but also, you know, the other towns and cities in this area?
So I guess because we have been removed and displaced from our homelands, that today it's hard to get out onto our country. The areas that we can access, which are closer to Arakoon, there are story places and places that are very important to us. And we ensure that they're protected. The elders make sure that the stories are told and kept alive. I guess if someone wants to visit, they'd have to be invited by an elder of a certain area to be able to go out on country.
So there's no towns there that might be visited by people who might be driving around Australia, for example, who could then visit those towns and experience some of the Arakoon Wik culture?
Well, the only town we have, like the only community we have at the moment, is Arakoon.
Right.
And our homelands remain undeveloped, except for a few houses that have been built on homelands, but that's only for traditional owners to access and go back out onto country.
So what's the best way, though, if people would like to experience Arakoon culture or the culture of the Wik people? Is there any way of doing that?
Well, I guess when you know, COVID-19 is finally over, I guess coming to Arakoon and experiencing it for yourself. Other ways that people can experience a bit of our culture is, you know, going online and searching up on Facebook, you know, our local not-for-profit land management organization, Arakoon Ngantam. They have a Facebook page you know, they put up stuff that happens out on country. Then there's the Woinmin Biocultural Project, Arakoon. They have a YouTube. Right. They're on YouTube.
It's very modern. Very modern.
And I guess you can experience a bit of our culture that way.
Kerry, I really appreciate your time this morning, and thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
And that was Kerry Tamwoy, a Wik woman from the Arakoon Wik Nation, and she has been our very special guest on Country this morning. And that was another podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.